We're turning again to Haggai this morning, and we'll either finish the book this morning or we'll need next Sunday morning as well. So let's see how far we can get today. I don't want us to rush through these verses because they seem to be especially relevant to God's people in these our times, and it's very important to digest food, the spiritual bread that is in the Word, and I would much rather us doing that and putting it into practice than just rushing in order to keep to timetables. Well, if we had kept to the timetable I had in mind, we were meant to have finished it before Christmas, but that's by the by now. So let's read the second chapter of Haggai. We are in the fourth message in the second chapter. That's in verses 10 to 20. And we need to finish the fourth message this morning, and then we'll proceed to the final and fifth message. So if we read verse 14 of Haggai 2 to the end. Then answered Haggai and said, "So is this people, and so is this nation before me, saith the Lord, and so is every work of their hands, and that which they offer there is unclean. And now I pray you, consider from this day and upward, from before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Lord, since those days were, when one came to an heap of 20 measures, there was but 10. When one came to the press vats for to draw out 50 vessels out of the press, there was but 20. I smote you with blasting and with mildew and with hail in all the labours of your hands. Yet ye turned not to me, saith the Lord. Consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Is the seed yet in the barn? Yea, as yet the vine and the fig tree and the pomegranate and the olive tree hath not brought forth. From this day will I bless you." So that is the end of the fourth message. And then the fifth message, verses 20 to 23. "And again the word of the Lord came unto Haggai in the 24th day of the month, saying, Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, everyone by the sword of his brother. In that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts." Now, both these messages were delivered on the day the foundation stone was laid in the temple that's being rebuilt. You will know by now, I'm sure, that the people were apathetic after returning from captivity because of discouragements. They had really given their heart to their own things and had neglected the house and things of God. But God raises Haggai and then Zechariah and Malachi to stir these people up to consider their ways, and they start rebuilding the temple. And Haggai is given these two messages on the day when the foundation stone is laid. One message, the fourth, is delivered primarily with the priests in view, and then the fifth message has the ruler, Zerubbabel, in view. But of course, it's to all the people as well. Now, in the fourth message we've been considering, Haggai wants the priest and the people to think, consider now. That is repeated several times in 10 to 20 in Haggai 2, and he wanted them to consider God's dealings with them. My friends, God is constantly dealing with us, his people. It's not just special events that are providences of God. Everything that is happening to you is part of God's plan for you. And what we need is a discernment to see the hand of God in these things that are happening to us. And so the two lessons that the people were to consider and learn in this fourth message was, firstly, affliction, trials, will either drive us away from the Lord gradually or suddenly, or they will draw us closer to him. They do take away whatever earthly props we're leaning upon and cause us to trust wholly in the Lord. Whether it's health we're dependent on, whether it's a godly person we're liable to lean on, God often removes these things in order that we may say, it's in the Lord alone I'm putting my trust. And then the second lesson, the one we looked at last Sunday, is this. There is a positive correlation between obedience and blessing. And we saw, and we took some time in doing this, that it's not just something in the prophets, it's throughout the Old Testament and in the New Testament. The words of Jesus Christ, maybe, need repeating in John 15, where he compares the believer and the church to a vine. Now, we are the branches. The Lord Jesus is the vine. And then he puts it like this. Verse 5 of John 15, I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. If a man or a woman or a child abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. And there are many Christians today who are withered because they have not continued in their obedience. So this is what we must finish this morning, this relationship between obedience and blessing. Now, for our encouragement, when God says to the people in chapter 1, I am with you, and later on at the day of the laying of the foundation stone, verse 19 of this chapter, from this day will I bless you. It's spoken those words to people who desire to follow harder after the Lord. So we're saying to God, Lord, I look back on the last few years and I can see that I haven't really run the race. I've been ambling. I've been looking to the world and I've been looking to Christ and I've fallen, I've let you down, and I feel completely powerless to follow harder after you in the year ahead. When I resolve to forsake certain sins, I can do it for a few days, but then I fall again and I feel even more guilty. Well, the Lord says, don't worry. If you desire to follow harder after me, you take the first step and I will meet you in the way and I will give you the strength that is needed. Isn't that lovely? What we are often loath to do is to take the first step. We've become discouraged and we kind of cocoon ourselves. No, my friend, you've got to take that first step of faith and God will meet you. He's a kind father. Do not worry, even if you step out in faith, not knowing what the future may hold. He will provide a safety net. So even if you do make a wrong decision, if the motive is right, you will fall into his loving arms. Now let's look again at this relationship between obedience and blessing. We ended the service last Sunday morning by singing that lovely hymn, Trust and Obey. For there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Now, I want us to ask at this point, what do we mean by blessing? Because in Haggai, the blessings are outward. Verse 17 is the classic phrase, I smote you with blasting and with mildew and with hail in all the labour of your hands, yet he turned not to me, saith the Lord. Now those are covenant curses upon a disobedient people, and the Lord allows their harvests and their crops and their military conquests to fail in order to bring the people to their senses so that they return to the Lord, and when they do that, heaven is opened again, and there is rain, and there is a bumper harvest, and there is military victory. Now, obviously, we can't apply that in a physical sense to us, can we? Need I make that clear in this church? This time last year, I was in India, and it was a blessing. But the last meeting we attended was in a stadium, and there were nearly 200,000 people there. And it was a Sunday evening. Imagine having 200,000 people listening to the gospel. And I was expecting a gospel message. And the man who was going to preach was a very well-known person. He was well-known politically as well as spiritually. And his wife introduced him. And she spoke for about 15 minutes. And she gave a beautiful gospel illustration. And I was looking forward now to the man himself. I'm sure he was going to give us a powerful gospel message. But oh, how disappointed I was when I heard instead, if you obey the Lord, you will receive riches, you will be healthy. Health and wealth, prosperity teaching. It's rampant in many poor countries. It's doing great damage to the cause of Christ. Now, that isn't blessing. That's the byproduct sometimes of blessing. I'm not denying that the Lord can put his healing hand upon a person, even today. I heard of a Christian the other day who believed, and maybe she has a warrant to believe this, that she has been healed. I believe God can do that, and I believe it's right to pray for that. But I don't equate that with blessing. And you may be successful, you may be rich, and you can say, the Lord has blessed me. But that isn't the crux of God's blessing. In the Old Testament, God was treating his people in a more childlike way, and so he often used outward things to teach them spiritual realities. And so, to his people in the Old Testament, a lack of harvest, a lack of rain, was a sign of God's frown and prosperity, and grain harvests was a sign of blessing. Now, that's no longer the case. In the New Testament, it is spirit and truth. We don't need the outward anymore. So what we got to ask this morning is, what constitutes blessing then? You know, we use the word, don't we? God blessed me, or it was a blessed meeting, or I'm praying for a blessing. Now, what do we mean by that? We must define our terms. I don't want us to come in here and then after the service to leave and hopefully say with a beatific smile on our faces, what a blessed time. And if somebody asks you, why was it a blessing, you're not able to say. Now, what is it? Well, the clue is in the chapter. Let me just read a few verses. Verse 17, the end. Yet he turned not to me. Verse 19, the end. From this day will I bless you. We'll come to it maybe next Sunday morning, verse 23. In that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and will make thee as a signet, that a ring that speaks of ownership, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. What is the blessing? Let me read. I'm just going to choose a few verses here. One of my favourites is Joshua chapter 1. Again, there is an outward indication of blessing in terms of the military conquests in the land of Canaan. But what is the nub of the blessing? Well, here it is. Yes, it's to do with conquering a land. Verse 4 of Joshua 1, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. Yes, military victory, there shall not be any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. But what is the heart of blessing? Here it is, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers. And then a little later, because this links to what we've been looking at, this relationship between obedience and blessing. Verse 7 of Joshua 1, only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. It doesn't matter, believer, where you find yourself. God has already gone before you if you have an obedient attitude. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. What is it? Have not I commanded thee, be strong and of a good courage? Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Now, we haven't got time to look at other verses, but if you scan the prophets, if you look at the blessings of the new covenant, this is it. I shall be their God, and you shall be my people. God is the blessing. We sang, whilst I feel thy love to me, every object teems with joy. May I ever walk with thee, for 'tis bliss without alloy. Let me but thyself possess, total sum of happiness. Perfect peace I then shall prove, heaven below and heaven above. I may be ill, I may have a terminal illness, and yet, if God is smiling upon me, I am well. I may be going through trials, I may be losing my job, I may be in a difficult family situation, I may be slandered by people, but if God is making his presence known and felt, then I say, I am enjoying heaven in the midst of it all. That's what blessing is about. Top lady summed it up so well when he put it like this. Lord, it is not life to live if thy presence thou deny. Lord, if thou thy presence give, 'tis no longer death to die. Source and giver of repose, singly from thy smile it flows. Peace and happiness are thine, mine they are, if thou art mine. You know, at this time of year, there is always something in the newspapers about resolutions and about how to make a happier you in the new year. And even when you read the secular press, they are all agreed on this, that happiness isn't an end in itself. If you try making happiness an end, you will become miserable. The saddest people in this world are those who are trying to work themselves up into a state of happiness, what even unbelievers say is this: happiness is a byproduct. And don't you find that to be the case? When you think less of yourself and more of others, when you give yourself to service, then you are content. Maybe when you try to have a me time. Have you had those? Maybe you decide to take a day off and to do what you really wanted to do all the time, and you end up feeling miserable. Well, let's another chorus put it. It's in our supplements. My goal is what? Blessing? No. My goal is God Himself. Not joy, nor peace, nor even blessing, but Himself. My God, 'tis His to lead me there, not mine, but His at any cost, dear Lord, by any road. And that's practical then. You see, the writer goes on, so faith bounds forward to its goal in God. It doesn't matter, you see, I'm not clinging on to my possessions now. I'm not saying to the Lord, Lord, I'm only going to be happy if I'm going to be here. I'm afraid of letting go and allowing you to lead me. No, it doesn't matter now. I'm holding loosely to these things. My faith is firm in God, so faith bounds forward to its goal in God, and love can trust her Lord to lead her there. Upheld by Him, my soul is following hard till God hath fulfilled my deepest prayer. No matter if the way be sometimes dark, no matter though the cost be oft times great, He knoweth how I best shall reach the mark. The way that leads to Him must needs be straight. Father knows best. Remember when you were a child? You trusted, if you had good parents, you trusted them implicitly. My heavenly Father knows what I stand in need of, and I'm confident in Him, and it doesn't matter. Very well, then, that is blessing. Other things may be given as a by-product, but if you make an end, if you make happiness your end, if you make, I don't know, if you make even God's known and felt presence your end, the feeling that it produces, then you are not going to enjoy it. Make God your goal. Now, there's something else here about this blessing, which is even more important, I believe, to us. Now, you need to know your Old Testament here. Let me just read the relevant verses. We're still on the fourth message. Consider now, verse 18, from this day. Now, this was December when the foundation stone was laid. Now, remember that, December. Verse 19, is the seed yet in the barn? Well, there's no more seed left. Why? Because they sowed the seed in October. The ground was soft after the rains, so that's when the seed was sown. Remember now that in the Old Testament, blessing, even spiritual blessings, were indicated by outward things, such as a good harvest. So if God is going to bless this people, it will show itself by a bumper crop. Now then, when was that going to happen? Were they going to have a bumper harvest in December? Well, if you've got any inkling of even gardening, you will know that you will not have a yield in December, right? The harvest is going to be in May or even June. So then, let's get our minds around this. The seed was sown in October. In December, they hear the words of this prophecy, which says to them, I will bless you. But that blessing isn't going to come to them until May. So January, February, March, April, May. 5, maybe 6 months. My friends, this is a blessing in prospect. That's what Haggai wants the people to do, to be encouraged, even when they're not going to be blessed at that very moment, but when it's going to happen in months' time. Now, can you see the relevance to us? I'm afraid we have imbibed the spirit of the age in the words of one song, I want it all, and I want it now, and if I can't have it now, I'm going to give up. God says, it is good for a man to quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. And even in the waiting, the blessing in prospect encourages us. It will come, the vision. It will not tarry, says another prophet. Now that to me is thrilling, that the Bible teaches me by faith to remind myself that God will bless in his time, in his way, so that I then can confidently go on in seeking and in serving him. We're not very good at that, are we? Can I even put it as bluntly as this? We may feel the urge to attend a prayer meeting. We want to do what is right. And it's a bad prayer meeting. There are such things, aren't there? Sometimes you just get a heavy atmosphere in a prayer meeting. It's no one's fault. It just happens. And the next thing we do is give up. You see, I want it now. We have a penny in the slots view of blessing. If I put my penny in the slots, then the sweet will come out. But no, that is not God's way of dealing with us. He says, are you ready to trust me implicitly? Are you ready to wait? Remember in Pilgrim's Progress, in the house of the interpreter, those two children, there was one child who was impatient and wanted it all now. And he was given what he asked for. And then there was another child who patiently waited. And when his time came, it was a long time coming, but my, what a portion he received. And he had the last laugh. And that's what we need, that patience. Well, let me give you another reference which will help you here. It's very relevant, this. In 2 Corinthians 4, the apostle puts it like this. We have this ministry as we have received mercy. I like it in the AV, don't you? We faint not. Spurgeon's got a chapter in his book on preaching called The Minister's Fainting Fits. It's not just ministers that have those. I'm sure every one of you at some point will have fainting fits. In the heat of the battle, you feel it's too much. Now, what do you do when it is like that? Well, Paul reminds the Corinthians that we have this treasure, verse 7, in jars of clay, a very delicate thing, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. I remember Ted Donnelly telling us ministers once, it is good for the earthenness of the vessel to show sometimes, so that people say it's not the man, but the Lord in and through the man. And some of you will remember our former pastor having to be helped up these steps. And then once he opened his mouth, the Spirit enabling him. That's God, not man. And then this is the key. Verse 16 of 2 Corinthians 4. For which cause we faint not. How do we keep ourselves from fainting, from passing out? But though our outward man perish. You see, if you're getting older, it's not just physically now, but mentally. You don't have that capacity to take things in as you did before. And you can be more prone to fears. But this is how we are to do it. Though our outward man perish, yet the inner man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, But the things which are not seen are eternal. These things, heaven, not yet, says our Father. In my time, I will take you home, but not now. Are you looking to heaven? When you're going through difficulties, you're reminding yourself, I'm supposed to be in the battle now. I will rest when I get home. The blessing in prospect. Let me just finish here. Well, we're not going to have time even to go to the fifth message, which I was hoping to begin this morning. But let me finish with this example of what we mean by blessing in prospect. After years of service in Africa, the missionary Robert Moffat, I'm sure you've heard of him, returned to Scotland to recruit helpers. When he arrived at the church one cold, wintry night, he was dismayed that only a small group had come out to hear him. What bothered him even more was that the only people in attendance were ladies. Now I'm reading what is down here. Although he was grateful for their interest, he had hoped to challenge men. He had chosen as his text Proverbs 8:4, "Unto you, O men, I call." Can you see his predicament? And how many churches in the valleys have an average age of 70, 80? And you're thinking, what hope is there for them? There's only a handful of people there. Listen. In his discouragement, he almost failed to notice one small boy in the loft pumping the bellows of the organ. Can you remember those organs that needed to be pumped? Moffat felt frustrated as he gave the message, for he realized that very few women could be expected to undergo the rigorous life in undeveloped jungles. But God works in mysterious ways. Although no one volunteered that evening, the young fellow assisting the organist was deeply moved by the challenge. As a result, he promised God he would follow in the footsteps of this pioneer missionary, and he remained true to his vow. When he grew up, he went and ministered to the unreached tribes of Africa. Do you know what his name was? David Livingstone. Blessing in prospect. It may be difficult at this very moment in your service. Sunday school, young people's meeting, door-to-door, open-air preaching. Whatever your sphere of service may be, you may not be seeing much results. But God is working behind the scenes. It's a hidden work often. And remember, in his time, if you faint not, you will reap. You may sow in tears, but one day, all of us will reap in joy for his name's sake. Amen.